Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The coronavirus pandemic has hit the hospitality industry hard. As COVID-19 rates continue to rise, restaurants have had to reevaluate their operating plans or permanently close. From the tipping system to sustainability to healthcare, this pandemic has exposed the major flaws of the hospitality system. The Milwaukee Independent Restaurant Coalition was recently formed to address these issues and create change so that restaurants can better succeed on the other side of this pandemic. Dan Jacobs of JVR Hospitality Group in Milwaukee has already had some of their restaurants close due to the pandemic. However, Jacobs sees hope for Milwaukee's restaurant economy if independent restaurants can unite. That's why he co-founded the MIRC, and Jacobs joins me now to tell us what inspired the action.
We needed to do something. We needed to organize. And I think at first it was just so we could kind of all get together and have the same phone call, you know, or have the same, just put everything in the same thread. And then we're like, you know, let's form a coalition. I think, you know, it's going to be better for us to voice our concerns as one loud voice, as opposed to a bunch of unorganized little voices. I have no experience, neither does John really, in coalition forming. Which, you know, is good and bad. But, you know, we knew that this was something that Milwaukee needed. We needed a voice for the independent restaurant and bars so that at the end of this, you know, we could see, you know, the restaurant and bar community succeeding.
So this was formed during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was formed in response to, so it was real early April. You know, we kind of idled around with what our mission was going to be. The first thing we did was we raised money for Caitlin Cullen to do the community meals for people who were out of work. So we raised $25,000, you know, and then we kind of just idled and didn't really know what our purpose was. I got involved with the Independent Restaurant Coalition at the national level and started to realize that, you know, our voice was, we could use our voice to help the Independent Restaurant Coalition and independent restaurants at large affect change. And one of the biggest things, you know, that the Restaurant Coalition has been working on is the Restaurant Stabilization or the Restaurant Act, which would inject $120 billion into independently owned restaurants to really just help restaurants get through this. You know, the PPP is nice, but it doesn't really work real well for restaurants and bars. You know, using 60% of it on your payroll when you're not bringing anybody in or doing anything doesn't make sense, you know? And I think most of us, especially restaurants, are uniquely vulnerable in a way that, you know, we don't want to settle ourselves with a bunch of extra debt. So we wanted to, you know, really kind of put forward something where we could help independent restaurants, help people get through COVID-19 without incurring a ton of debt. And be able to have that flexibility to not just pay rent, mortgage, taxes on our mortgage and our employees, but to, you know, pay our vendors as well, because, you know, restaurants are an engine of a economic ecosystem, you know, of a local economy. Our reach is so far and varied that, you know, most people don't realize the extent of the things that we touch, whether it's local farmers, local cheesemakers, you know, to large broadliners that employ truck drivers and, you know, factory workers, and to linen companies, you know, that not only do their part, you know, locally, like we use Baytel out of Green Bay, but they also use a local fabric maker that makes their aprons and stuff like that. But without restaurants, that fabric maker is not going to have anything to do. So it's really one of those things that we saw a real need and something that could, you know, just stimulate the economy right away. We also act as a pass-through for money. I mean, the way you look at it is, you know, 90 to 95 cents of every dollar that comes into a restaurant goes directly out of that restaurant into the community, whether it's, like I said, paying vendors or paying our employees. And our employees then go and spend money in the community as well. So we just saw this as a really great way to kind of A, stimulate the economy, and B, really save kind of restaurants as, you know, the gatekeepers, you know, for culture in the community. Restaurants are important. Not only are they gathering places historically for information and for celebrations, but they truly, you know, give you insight into a community.
The MIRC also supports fair, more economically sustainable, and more inclusive restaurant and bar communities. So what does inclusivity mean to you?
The term inclusivity should be something that we all should be thinking about, not just me. This is something that we all are kind of, at least I am, I'm introspectively thinking about this. Me and Dan have had long conversations about this. And for years, we've wanted to find a way to really change pieces of the restaurant industry that could really affect inclusivity. And one of them being is the tipping policy. Tipping is inherently racist. It is a practice that, you know, ever since, you know, we were opening up Dan Dan, which is like literally in 2 weeks, it'll be 4 years ago, we wanted to do this. But the status quo was what it was, and it would have made it very difficult. Right now, we have a blank slate. Like the restaurant industry as a whole, not just tipping, but how we look at who works in the front, who works in the back, how we promote people, how we hire people, how owners can get a more equitable share of, you know, of the restaurant itself is all on the table, I think. And one of the ways that we can really help employees out right now is to just do away with the tipping policy, which we've done at Dan Dan, and we've done it successfully for the last 4 weeks. We moved to a service fee based system. We automatically tack on 20% to every bill. This is used to pay the entire staff. So it breaks down, you know, everybody makes a salary. Everybody makes way above a minimum wage. It can be done, and we're not blowing money. The only thing that, you know, we lose is we lose the tip tax credit, which, you know, is in place to basically keep this system in place. And it's up to us to try and find a way to change that and break that.
Yeah, among tipping and the way that is used as the main way for people to get and earn money in the restaurant industry, you know, COVID is also exposing a lot of other faulty systems and a lack of longevity, you know, such as how difficult it is to get health insurance for yourself as restaurant owners or for your workers, benefits, other things like that. So you mentioned you're able to do this successfully at Dan Dan. Do you think there is enough reception across the industry to, as you said, really make new changes with this blank slate you'll have?
I've been on conversations in groups with the with HUA, which is a Hospitality United organization, and then in the Independent Restaurant Coalition about this very thing. And I think there's enough interest and there's enough of us that really see this as a opportunity to seize. I think our biggest mistake that we could make is to let this opportunity pass us by and just go back to the status quo, because the status quo wasn't working great before. It was there, but we can make this better. We can do better, and it's up to us to do that.
Back in June, the MIRC also called upon the city to require face masks when in restaurants and other public places, and that order is now in effect here in Milwaukee. But when it comes to the ebb and flow of restaurants trying to balance and weigh the risks of operating at different capacities, or in some cases, opening, closing, reopening, closing again, or like you said, closing permanently, how do you think this highlights these issues of sustainability in the field of hospitality?
I'm going to be real, real frank. It sucks. You know, it's incredibly difficult to play this balancing act. The main reason why we asked the city for the mask mandate is we have enough on our plate. I don't need to argue with somebody about the merits of wearing a mask. At the very baseline of why a mask is important is it just shows how much you care about the people around you. If you're truly a Christian, if you're truly just a good person, you're interested in the health of the people around you and just keeping the people around you safe. This is the easiest thing we could do without going backwards to a stay-at-home order. It's the only way that we will keep our staff safe, our business safe, and be able to continue operating is for our guests to wear masks along with us. It's the right thing. It was the right move. It should have been done a lot earlier. As far as, you know, weighing the options of what to do, I mean, it's incredibly difficult. You know, we at Dan Dan have only opened our patio. We allow people to come inside just to place their order or to use the bathroom. We have a counter service now where we give numbers to tables. We run the food out to them. We give them the drinks as they walk out. And I don't know if I'm comfortable having diners inside right now. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I'm watching my friends around me close their restaurants temporarily. We closed Fauntleroy permanently because it became too difficult for us to operate at the standard that we hold ourselves to. When you don't have a way to have people inside, it's very difficult to be able to effectively do anything. Nothing is successful right now. If anything, we're all scraping by, purely just based on numbers. You know, it became something that we knew we had to do, regardless of it being a hard decision. And it's incredibly hard, man. I mean, you're talking about telling people that have been with us for, 4 years that, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going to lay you off now. And I don't think I'm going to be able to bring you back. And that's difficult. Not only the starting and stopping. So if you do have a staff member that tests positive, you know, the right thing to do is to shut completely down, which is what I'm watching my friends do. And then, you know, what do you do with the product? You know, what do you do with, you just have to start all over again. So this, I don't think people realize it's not like snapping a finger and I can just get right back. My restaurant's just going to reopen. It takes staff. It takes products. Like, you have to redo everything. It's incredibly difficult, and I'm terrified of wintertime. I have no idea what's going to happen come October, because once we can't use this patio, I don't know, man. I just don't know.
You've mentioned that coming together on a united front through this coalition helps you bring all of your voices to one front. So as we tentatively move through this time of the coronavirus, what do you think are the main legislative and ethical issues you believe that the MIRC can help with, or that the restaurant industry faces overall?
Right now, I think in the short term, you know, the restaurant industry needs help. It needs Congress to throw us a bone. Congress has bailed out other industries where it was their fault, whether it was the banking industry in 2008, multiple times the automobile industry or the airline industry. They were bailed out by the federal government, and that was brought on by decisions that they made. Unlike any of these things, independent restaurants and restaurants in general face a absolute crisis, but we didn't do this to ourselves. We were all doing pretty well in February. And then all of a sudden it was like a steep decline off a cliff come middle of March. And really, like, you know, success is now based on, man, I'm doing 50% of my sales. That's success right now, you know, and that's a tough pill to swallow, which is why we're asking, you know, the federal government for help. Short-term locally, you know, it would be real helpful if the state of Wisconsin can get together legislatively and give us a temporary pass on allowing cocktails to be sold to go or open containers to be sold to go. One of the things that, you know, if you're a restaurant and you don't have a patio, or you're unwilling to let people inside your restaurant, is you miss out on 30% of your sales right there with liquor, beer, wine. So allowing us to be able to sell that stuff to customers on their way out the door, sealed in a safe way, we go a long way towards helping restaurants be more viable and stay viable for a longer period of time. That would be an absolute help to everybody. But again, you know, Wisconsin's liquor laws are incredibly old, incredibly hard to change, and go along a very, very divided line between political parties. And it's unfair for people like myself, or even the local little bars like Bernhardt's, Newport, Mothership, and Bayview, to have to, you know, they can't do what they should be able to do because, you know, guys are arguing about something that, you know, has nothing to do with them. It's just about helping us out right now.
Well, Daniel Jacobs, I want to thank you for your time and helping to shed light on some of the issues you're personally facing.
Thank you so much. I mean, we're just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, if the government doesn't help us out in some sort of a way, you know, we're looking at 1 in 4 restaurants closing, and that's a real, real thing.
Dan Jacobs is the co-founder of the Milwaukee Independent Restaurant Coalition.